This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan.
Welcome to episode 162 of our show, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. This is our year-end episode as we say farewell to 2023 and we set our sights on what's ahead in 2024. I thought I would play a couple of songs to open this episode which have to do with new beginnings. The first song is the original recording of Rise, Let Us Be Going, which was recorded in 1997 on my album, The Anchor Holds. The second one is a song I wrote to Psalm 126. I call it, We Were Like Those Who Dream, but these are the Israelites as they are going back to their homeland after being slaves in another land for 70 years. It's a time of starting over. So this is Rise, Let Us Be Going, and We Were Like Those Who Dream, Psalm 126.
Creation.
Let us be going, going, going. When the Lord brought back His children to Zion, we were like those who dreamed. Oh, how we laughed, how we sang the songs of our fathers. We were like those who dreamed. Then the nation said, God has done great things for them, we agree. We agree that God has done great things for us. We are glad, oh, so glad. They that sow in tears will reap with great joy, bringing their sheaves with a shout of praise. For us, and we are glad, oh, so glad. They that sow in tears will reap with great joy, bringing their sheaves with a shout of praise. Bringing their sheaves with a shout of praise.
Our guest on the show tonight is my good friend, Dr. Gary Wright from Greenfield, Indiana. Gary is a very important figure in my life. I met him in February 1970 when he knocked on my dormitory door and invited me to a church service they were going to have the next day. Gary was talking about a big revival which had happened at Asbury College a couple or 3 weeks earlier. I didn't go to that service, but I heard about it the next day when a mighty awakening happened again in Anderson, Indiana. Gary was with the team that was sharing their experience of what they had seen at Asbury. So I saw Gary for a year or two, and then we lost contact with each other for a number of years, for decades. Fast forward to 2019, and we reconnected on Facebook. And after a while, Gary invited me to do this show on their network. Gary now is president of a wonderful missions organization called World Renewal. And my life has been blessed tremendously as I have become involved with Gary and his organization. So let's go to a conversation Gary and I had on the telephone on December 20th, 2023. Gary, my wife and I were talking about your family in the car a couple of days ago. She remembered, I think this is your cousin named Max Wright, a relative of yours, right? Max Wright?
Yes, and really as close as you can get to having another brother. Max Wright is my double first cousin.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Two Wright brothers married sisters. Okay. And so his dad and my dad are brothers. His mom and my mom are sisters. And they say the DNA on that makes you just about as close as you could be to have another brother. And you also know Donna Franklin.
Yes.
That's Max's sister. And they have two more sisters. But didn't matter which side of the family we went to, the Wright family or, you know, the maternal side, they were there all the time. And so we all grew up together and sat around the same tables at holiday at least twice, usually.
Yes.
So,
well, she remembered Max because Max is a huge advocate for Haiti, I think, if my memory serves me well.
He's made over 60-some trips for World Renewal to Haiti.
Yeah. And so I told her that, and she commented, which I said, it's really true. She says, what a spiritual legacy that Wright family has. And I told her, which I think she still remembered, that it went all the way back to, was it your great-grandfather? I know we talked about him on a podcast, but I'm wondering if you could just tell us again.
Well, my great-grandfather on my maternal Wright family side, my grandmother, it would be her dad. He was really the town drunk, but he was a barroom musician, played just about any kind of stringed instrument, apparently played them extremely well. And he did not come to Christ till he was 55. But he had married, my great-grandmother was a godly woman, and she came from a godly family. So that's another generation, even before my great-grandfather. And so that really brings our family heritage, really has to do with, he was kind of the ringleader, you know, at that time when he came to Christ. He was 55. He took his grandchildren and started taking them to church with him to do the music. He taught them how to vocalize, how to play instruments like Max and Donna's father played the big old string bass, you know, and they all had, you know, the girls, their vocals, that harmony, you know, from siblings was so close, and you know, you almost couldn't hardly distinguish the voices, you know, and yet they were singing harmony. And then we grandchildren from that generation, there's so many of us that do ministry, and then beyond our children and our family.
Your grandson has a Christian podcast. So it's quite a family. Refresh my memory. Your great grandma went to church. He was at home, and he had quite an experience, didn't he? To lure him to that church.
He got drunk one night and passed out in bed, and he was laying there, and he woke up and he saw things crawling on the wall. So he was really having a wild experience, you know, that was the alcohol was the source of, but it scared him. And he got dressed. He knew where his wife was. She was attending a revival service. And of course she had all the church praying for him to come to Christ. And here he goes down the street, goes into church where they'd already started, and, sits down next to her, and they all really encouraged him to accept Christ that night, but he wasn't quite ready to do that. First of all, he needed to be sober to do it.
Yeah.
but he went back the next night, gave his life to Christ, and in many ways, our family's never been the same since, because he took a very aggressive approach to helping his children not only know Christ. My dad was not a part of that musical ministry, but I really think my dad would say, you know, growing up, his favorite person in his life was that grandfather. And my dad was in Germany from World War II when that grandfather passed away. And when my dad came to Christ, he went to the camp meeting that he knew was his grandfather's favorite camp meeting, and that's where my dad gave his life to Christ. And, you know, when he talks about that grandfather, he doesn't talk about sinful stuff other than, you know, him coming to Christ. He talks about, you know, how his grandfather loved him and how much he loved Christ. And he talks about, he witnessed, you know, the change. He saw how Jesus changed his grandfather's life. And that's really was, I think, what influenced my dad to come to Christ was that grandfather.
Well, what a legacy that he has is still going on. And I'm sure he would be awfully proud of you. This is the year-end episode of the podcast. I wanted to get you on here because looking back on the last year in my life, there have been two big things that have just really blessed my life a lot in 2023. One of them was this new Asbury revival, which happened in February. Again, services around the clock, and it touched the whole world. I mean, so much so that they had to cancel the meetings because so many were coming into town. And I don't think the town had enough toilets for them, the way I read it.
Yeah.
They had a toilet.
Yeah, one of my favorite online pictures was the traffic sign, the highway sign that said that Wilmore is closed. You know, there's no room left.
Yeah.
You know, you can't come in, you know, and it uses the word revival, you know, that the revivals closed down the town.
That's your alma mater. That's your alma mater. And I remember they commemorated the 50th anniversary in 2020, I guess.
Yes.
And a lot of people thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if it would happen? But you can't program these things. It happened when it happened. But it caught the attention of the world, the whole world.
I think one of the things that it showed is how hungry people are for the presence of God. People really are hungry. And, you know, people flocking that town, you know, it's just a really small town you know, the biggest thing there is Asbury University and Asbury Theological Seminary. And one's on one side of the street and one's on the other. And you know, the way people went to that town, they were really seeking to the presence of the Lord. And for so many, they experienced that. So it really shows how hungry people are for a taste of Jesus.
The other thing, Gary, that has really blessed my life, and I wanted to talk to you because you were such a part of this, is I have become more aware than ever about the plight of the, I guess we'll call them the secret church, the persecuted church, those that have to be very careful in where they worship and who they can talk to and that sort of thing. And that is through Word Renewal. So let's talk about Word Renewal. Then I want to talk about a little bit more specifically about what some of our brothers and sisters are going through. Okay, tell me if I got this right. You graduated from Asbury College, and you became a traveling evangelist for a number of years, right?
Well, I actually, from the time in 1970 in February when the Asbury Revival happened that week, I really became an evangelist then. I just didn't know it. You know, coming to Anderson on the team and then forming my own team that was done while I was still in college. And we traveled together and, you know, the team, the individuals changed from time to time. And then did that right up to a night for 5 years. I was really a full-time, we use the word evangelist. I was really a revivalist that saw evangelism take place as a result of the church being revived. And then I went into the pastorate. And then I was asked to become an evangelist again in 1986, January 1 of 1986, started again. And now, you know, here I am about 38 years later, still doing that work. Only in 1990, after serving 5 years here in North America, we began to be asked to minister in other places outside of the United States. So that started in 1990, and I've been doing global work where basically we just come alongside of Christian leaders and help them accomplish their dreams and their visions. Our mission statement, you know, is that we're trying to develop a spirit-filled, self-reproducing leaders and churches. And that's really what's happened. We wrote that mission statement after we saw what God was doing.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to write it after you see him doing it and say, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just recognizing what has already happened. So here's the thing, though. You were faithful for 20 years traveling around, and then you pastored, how many churches did you pastor?
I pastored a church plant in northern Michigan, and I did that for 4 years, and the Lord really blessed it. It was just kind of like, you know, the Asbury Revival on the corner of Fifth and Oak, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we were asked to pastor a college church in Kansas that was part of what is now Barclay College. It's a little town, central Kansas. I was 28 when they hired me. I had a lot of rough edges and wasn't really the student of the word and of ministry that I needed to be to do what I'm doing today. And they allowed me to grow up there in front of them, being their pastor. And then being on the, when I started World Renewal for 5 years, I also taught full time on the Berklee College campus until, you know, World Renewal was just getting too big, too complicated for me to do two different things.
So in 1990, that's when you really put your hand to the plow to start and steer World Renewal, right? 1990?
The global part.
Yeah, the global part.
We started in 86 to 90. We did just the United States, and we went from the East Coast to the West Coast, from northern border, to Mexico, and Texas and all that. I have four children, and my wife played the piano, and my daughter and I would do a lot of the vocals together and leading worship and singing, and my older boy ran the sound system. It was a brother love salvation show,
Yeah.
And we did that until the kids got old enough that we felt like they needed, some normalcy. And my wife, became a associate pastor in the church in Ohio, in Damascus. And she stayed home. And then I got a band, and we traveled together for 27 years, the band and I.
Wow. So when you went global, you started out with basically one country, right? Brazil? Was that?
No, we actually started when the walls came down in Eastern and Middle Europe. We actually started in the country of Hungary and Romania. And those Hungarian sections around Hungary that had once been part of the country of Hungary, but was broken up because of World War II. And we began there when the wall came down. We were invited to go there and do the similar things that we'd done here in North America, we did throughout Central Europe. And then I think the next place we ministered in, at that point, that's when we were invited to join Tele Marais in Brazil. And we reached out to some of the Caribbean islands and Mexico City especially. And then we just kept adding them. We just added a missionary this week from Nicaragua, and we haven't had any missionaries there full time, but now we do.
And so, how many countries is it now?
We are serving 60 some countries, and that can be as little or as small as us just training pastors online to the opposite, where Brazil is our oldest and most mature field. You know, we have a Bible college, seminary, and multiple church plants, all different kinds of ministries. We have businesses that we've created to support people in ministry. We've sent out missionaries from Brazil to other countries that are full-time missionaries. We also have full-time missionaries from our work in Mexico City as well. So we keep adding those as those countries mature, then they send out folks in ministry to other countries as well.
I've got my hand on. Straight ahead.
there's a purpose for it all. Listen to fulfill. Listen to a podcast called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning. Let's go back to a conversation I have with Dr. Gary Wright as we talk about the missions organization he leads. So it's called World Renewal. It's in Greenville, Indiana. I had someone write me just a couple of weeks ago, said, I really want to help people in other parts of the world with what little money I've got to give us an offering. And of course I said, you know, here it is, World Renewal, Post Office Box 399, if my memory serves me right.
You got your memory's working.
Greenville, Indiana. I know the first two zips are 47, I think. Is it 47?
46140.
46140. So
they could go right online, you know, or on their phone, they could just type in worldrenewal.org and you'll get our website and you can go from there. And the website, if you're having 60 countries you're serving, you've got some things that you have to figure out once you get to the website, because it's hard. We're doing everything we can to simplify that website, but it keeps growing.
Well, it's an amazing thing. I'm part of a Zoom prayer meeting with you, and people get on there from all over the world, and it's just an amazing thing that what y'all are doing, or like you say, you're just helping them, you're facilitating, you're giving money to them. It's not like the old days where you sent what we would call a foreign missionary. I remember when I was growing up, they would say, he's called to be a foreign missionary. He's going to go on the foreign field.
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore. You find the people who live there and you know, rub shoulders with their own people and help them in all sorts of ways. But that's Zoom meeting.
We found that the best approach is to share the gospel, it being someone that's part of their group, their nationality, their language, you know, their culture. And what we try to do is to help equip and train the people in their culture, those cultures, so that they can share it with others. And, but we try to do it in such a way that, we don't export Americana. And we have to really work hard at not doing that and make sure that what we're really sharing is the biblical Jesus. And that's why we put an emphasis on North Americans not being up front doing all the ministry. We may do some initial training, but our goal is as soon as possible, the people from that culture are the ones up front doing the leading, and that works best.
Gary, I went to a Christmas concert a couple of weeks ago with a well-known Christian group. And I was talking to somebody who went to that same concert, and this person was saying that when they were singing "Oh Holy Night," and they came to the line, "And all oppression will cease in his name," this person said to me, it was a little offensive because what this person said was, Western Christians many times have oppressed other countries in the name of Christianity. And, you know, said that's a hard line to take. Well, I thought about that for a few minutes and, well, for a day or two. And then next time I saw this person, I said, we got to remember one thing. And this has to do with world renewal, too. That Christianity was never started out as a religion of the privileged. I mean, it started out as the religion of the have-nots. The last thing on their mind was oppressing anybody, or, you know, they were just struggling to stay alive and keep preaching the gospel. And I said, I am in contact with people from the other side of the world who don't come out in gold lame evening gowns to celebrate Christmas. I mean, they're sitting in jail cells. And I said, Christianity is not a religion where that was ever meant to colonize or promote America or to promote the Western world. I mean, that it happened. I mean, the Western world embraced it. But I said, Christianity is a religion of the poor. It's a religion of those who are oppressed themselves just for loving the Lord. And sometimes we forget that in America, that it started out, and all over the world right now, it's not the privileged people in a lot of countries, as you and I both know. In that light, let's talk about the secret church and what they're going through. Now, we had the opportunity last week, and I'm not going to talk about countries or details, but it was very moving last week for all of us to actually talk to and hear a couple of Christians who have just fled a certain country, really for their own safety, and to hear them talk about what they're going through in certain parts of the world. Could you comment on that? Or?
Sure. It is a privilege to serve people who are committed to Christ to the point that they're willing daily to live out their Christian life, not knowing if it's their last day on earth. because of their relationship to Christ, because they're in a country where it's illegal. Usually the legality has to do with you can't convert someone from into Christianity is usually what the legal aspect of the law is, but it obviously would go way beyond that in actual how it's lived out. And in the situation that we were in last week, a video had been shown of a baptism taking place, and then the pastor who had performed the baptism in the video then was being hunted down, and he chose not to flee the country. He chose to let them put him in jail if that's what they wanted to do, because he wasn't going to abandon his people. And very courageous, and I think looking back, that was a hard decision, I think, to make. But in the end, he along with a large number of other people who were arrested and put in jail, were all eventually freed. And it was really not the Christians in that community that put pressure on the government to free them. It was those outside of Christianity who said, hey, this is wrong. And that was a surprise and a refreshing result that I think none of us expected, including those who were sitting in jail during that time period.
And it could have gone all the way to being beheaded, you know. Had it gone,
they almost always, when they're arrested, threatened that this is a capital offense, and that it could lead to execution. And if you are in jail because of your Christianity, you're probably not surrounded by other Christians. Yes. And so there's real danger just being put in jail in those kind of situations. And in this particular situation, even if they were not arrested, because the community had seen the baptism video, then there was the threat, and it was a real threat, that a mob would come and execute the Christians. And that's not an isolated situation.
Yeah.
Especially with the Israeli Hamas situation, all of the intensity on the Church of Jesus Christ all over the world is under great persecution and greater intensity. And it's all stepped up all over the world. And it's not what we just described was not an isolated incident. It's happening all over the world.
Yeah. And we hear about this every week. Every week we hear more.
Every week. And it's not just a region of countries. You know, it's really various countries around the world.
And in spite of that, house churches, secret churches are flourishing. That's the wild thing about it. And that's the way it always was. It was in the book of Acts. In spite of it, God is moving.
If you want to make the church grow, just persecute it. And pretty soon you just have congregations. You know, one of the things that's happening, again, it's not one region of the world, but it's happening in several regions. One of the things we heard in prayer meeting last week was one of our missionaries who is ministering to someone who is a prostitute said to that prostitute, hey, you know, we've been reading scripture together. If Jesus was to appear to you in a dream, would you consider him as being God? And the person said yes. And so, you know, we all joined that missionary praying that that God would appear into this person's dreams. And that, you know, the man showing up and the man in white showing up in people's dreams is happening all over the world. Yeah. And it's fantastic. And to be able to pray with someone that they are reaching out to, who's in human trafficking, that Jesus would appear in their, in their dreams. And if that happens, would you consider him as your Lord and Savior? Wow, Lawrence, that's just, I can't tell you how much that excited my heart.
And we've been told by, there are certain cultures where dreams are very, very important. And there's many, many people have come to the Lord through dreams. I remember there was one person that we heard who became a Christian when he was a young man, and his family wrote him off, and his sister came to try, they asked his sister to come and try to get him to recant and go back to the family's religion, and he didn't budge. But like a couple of weeks later, his sister came, or shortly after that, his sister came and said she had had a dream. There was a man in a robe, and he said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And this man said, "I've got to show you something in the book of John." And he flipped to the place where Jesus said, "I am the way," the exact words this person heard in her dream, who had never heard that before.
Right.
And she came to the Lord. But I was sitting in the den just a few nights ago. Trish and I were sitting there. The Christmas tree was on. We were listening to Christmas music with a wood fire. And I thought, this was before our brothers and sisters were released. I thought, here we are in a warm house drinking hot chocolate, and our brothers and sisters are sitting in a prison cell not knowing if they might be executed or 3 or 4 years of hard labor. And it's, I just thank God for World Renewal, because it's lit a fire in me to see things from a larger perspective than just the American church. The American church, and I thank God for it, it's the most generous. I mean, the American church is a very generous church for world mission.
The finances to reach people around the world.
Yeah.
The largest percent comes from United States.
Right. But we fight and argue over so many things, and here are these people who are suffering. And it's just opened my eyes. And so I thank God for World Renewal. I thank God for how you and this whole organization has touched my life. You know, I heard one time about the founder of the Christian Missionary Alliance Church, and I never...
A.B. Simpson.
Yes. Yep. He was a great man of God, but somebody walked into his office one time, unannounced, and he was standing looking out the window, and he was holding a globe, and he was holding the globe to his heart, clutching it, you know, hugging it, and weeping. He was weeping over the world. And I want to be that kind of guy. I want to have a vision for our brothers and sisters all over the world. I thank God for you, Gary, and I thank God for World Renewal, and I'll let you say the closing remarks.
He's got the accelerator, you know, to the metal. And, it's an exciting time. It's an awful time. It's a dangerous time, but it's a time where, you know, scripture is rising up before us and being lived out with the end times. And we're in the last few seconds of the fourth quarter, I think.
Yeah.
And so, Lawrence, I love being on the Jesus team with you in the last few seconds of the fourth quarter.
Oh, isn't that great? And a lot of games have been won on the last few seconds.
I love it.
Well, I will talk to you in 2 days.
And I love your 88 friends too, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. Well, God bless. Love you too. Bye. That's our year-end episode for 2023. I want to thank everybody that has helped us through the last year with this podcast. First of all, Brian Hoogenboom, our wonderful engineer, Mike Dawka, who downloads everything in Indiana, Julie Carroll, who helps me immeasurably, the Damascus Road Band, who provides so much of the music, and I'm thankful for all of our guests that have been on this show. I've got one last thing to say as we close this out, something I said in 1972 when I wrote this song, "Carry on, carry on. It won't be long before we're gathered around God's throne. Carry on." God bless. Happy New Year.
To my brothers and my sisters who are facing persecution and are spending time in prison for the things the Lord has done. When they kick you and they beat you, no matter how they treat you, we'll be praying that the Lord will give us strength to carry on. Carry on, carry on. Students on the campus who are speaking out for Jesus as the winds of opposition swirl around you day by day. Even if you're mocked and hated, don't you be intimidated. There's a great reward that's waiting if you'll only carry on. Carry on, carry on. Won't be long before we gather round God's throne. Carry on, carry on. To the lonely missionary, to the pastor growing weary, the parents of the wayward child for whom you prayed so long. This is not the time to let up, it's the time to lift your head up. Swing your soul with tears, you reap in joy. Don't stop, carry on, let's go. Carry on. And you need some consolation, 'cause the devil's doing all he can to make you trip and fall. Yes, the devil will accuse you, he'll even try to bruise you, but resist him and he'll flee from you. Get up and carry on. Carry on.
Thanks for coming.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song.